Welcome back to Rust Belt Running, guys. I'm Andrew Hettinger, and coming up shortly is going to be Adam Wheeler. He's going to be sitting down and talking with one of our athletes today, Erica Gennaro. She ran Boston back in April, and she's been training with us since we started. She's also been on this podcast a few times. You know, if you're interested in, like, different ways that you can enter some of these races, we have numerous episodes with Erica on them, dating back to before the pandemic. Back in our Thomas days. For those of you who are the OG Rust Belt Running listeners, I think Thomas was still working with us when she was first on with our friend Heather McLeod. And they talked about, you know, raising money and entering the majors through charity entries. So there's a lot of good stuff. She's a wealth of knowledge. She's one of our best friends. You know, I'm very blessed and fortunate to have been able to get to know her and her husband Niles over the years, and they've just become really good friends of ours. And yeah, I'm really grateful that she came on. And also, this is my second take doing this, and I'm glad it is, because this is turning out much better than the first one. So sometimes the second take is better. Yeah, so anyways, they come on and they talk about training for Boston and kind of the dynamic of working with us, and then just Boston in general and what that experience was like this year. So I know you're really going to enjoy this conversation. Before I hand it over to Adam, just a couple of house cleaning things. I got to let you know, this podcast, we want to keep it free, and we want to keep it without ads, without paywalls, and we need your support to do that. So if you go to rustbeltrunning.com, you can learn more about our different offerings and run coaching. You can shop for merch. You can even donate to the show and donate through Spotify and stuff like that if you want to help us, you know, continue to grow and bring you new stuff and pay for my therapy. But apart from that, like, let's hand it over to them. Last thing. As this is published, yesterday was Mother's Day, and I just want to send a quick shout out to all the mothers out there, and especially our moms. We wouldn't be here literally and figuratively without you and your support. So we're very grateful to the mothers who have supported us, and a special thank you to my wife, who through my 10 years of running has taken on extra parenting duties with our child when I am out chasing goals and failing to meet them. But regardless of my ability to hit the goals or not, I'm very grateful for all the support I have received and will continue to receive. So happy Mother's Day to everybody, and I hope it was a great one. And to those who are, you know, mourning the loss of a mother, we're there with you too. So hope that your Mother's Day was special in another way. And, you know, we're here to support in any way we can. So thank you guys so much for listening. And I'll be back on the other side of this conversation with Erica Gennaro.
Thanks, Andrew. Before I get to our guest tonight, Erica, I want to talk about our coaching tip for the week. The NBA playoffs are starting, and that means that I've seen some different videos of NBA greats talking, and a video by Kobe Bryant actually, I thought, made for a really good story that kind of rolls into a coaching tip. So bear with me for my NBA story that I'm going to tell. Kobe was talking about his first elimination game as a member of the Lakers, his rookie year, and he had a horrible game, shot like 4 or 5 air balls, a lot of his shots fell short, and the commentary after the Lakers lost that game was on how the stage was too big for Kobe, he wasn't built for it, and there's just a lot of concern that this kid they drafted right out of high school just wasn't really built for the NBA and for the pressure of the NBA. And he said, you know, I had to kind of walk away from that game and think about why these things happened, and he said, it wasn't in my head, it wasn't that the stage was too big, he said, I was a high school kid a year ago, and I played like 35 games in a year, and I had often 4 or 5 days off in between games, lots of time for recovery, and then I took that 18-year-old kid body and jumped into a, you know, an adult game where I was playing 82 games plus the playoffs, often 4 games in a week. So I was tired. I was shot. Like, I just wasn't ready for the stress of that level. So he said, you know, I had to go back and look at what I wasn't doing right. And for him, it was going to the gym and making sure that he was taking care of his body and basically preparing it not for the level he'd been at, but for the level that he was at now. And so the coaching tip is this. Andrew, Matt, and I will tell people that when we were younger, we used to just kind of like roll from one training cycle into another. Not a lot of not a lot of time to reflect on anything. We would just say, hey, we ran our spring race, that's great, and immediately jump into training for the fall race without really thinking about how things had gone. If you are finding yourself here at the end of the spring, jumping from a spring cycle, getting ready for a fall cycle, take a little bit of time to actually stop and reflect and think about how things went. There's going to be things that went well, and that's great. That's the foundation for your next training cycle, but there's probably going to be things that didn't go well. And if you actually stop and think about what didn't go well and start to think about why it didn't go well, you can start making adjustments that will make your next cycle of training a lot better. And if you find yourself in a situation where things didn't go well, but you're not really sure why, that's where we talk about getting perspective all the time. Go talk to friends, go talk to fellow runners about issues they've had. And if you're not getting good answers there, you want to talk to coaches, we're here. Come talk to us. We'll sit down, we'll do a consult with you. Those are free. Maybe it's a good fit for you, maybe it's not, but being reflective after the really big races that you invest all your, you know, kind of emotional and physical eggs into those baskets, if you take the time to think about how things have gone, it's going to lead to much better training in the future. So that's our training tip for the week. And now, Erica Gennaro, I can introduce you and have you back on. You, how many times have you been on our podcast now?
Ooh, I think this might be the fourth.
It's third four or fourth. Five. Like, you are definitely up there in terms of returning guests. Well, I know we had you and Heather on, I think, during COVID to talk about the fundraising you had been doing. And then I know we had you on at least one more time after that. At least the two of you, at least one more time after that. I think two. I think this is probably four. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah,
we're
that
approaching
sounds about
200
right.
episodes. So, yeah, there's a lot to reach back for us. So, I don't know, but yeah, you're back, and it's good to have you back. It's good to have you back because you're one of our athletes. I've done now two Boston Marathons with you as well. So we have a lot to talk about.
Sure do. I'm excited. Thanks for having me.
So let's kind of start here because you ran Chicago last year, and you crushed Chicago. You set, what, a 9-minute PR in that race?
Yep, 9-minute PR, negative splits the whole way.
Yeah. Was that an easy thing to do on a course that's so different from, like, say, a Boston? Because Chicago is pancake flat.
I actually think that, like, running a consistent to a negative split pace is one of my strengths. Like, I'm pretty good at holding back. So I think the consistency of the course actually was an advantage.
Okay. I feel like that was a strength of mine, and then I did so much time trialing to try to get my, like, actual BQ to get me into Boston that I got sick of doing it, and now I feel like hilly races are far better for me. Not the past one that I just did, but overall, I like hilly races better now because I get sick of trying to, like, time trial everything. The reason I bring up Chicago is that was a really big goal of yours. You had been strength training consistently by the time you ran Chicago for about a year, and you actually told me you ran less. You trained less with us last year getting ready for Chicago than you had the year before, but the strength training very clearly ended up being a difference maker for you there.
Yeah. So I think in 2023, roughly, I ran 400 miles less than, like, the past two or three years. So that was pretty impressive. Just, like, body felt good, mind felt good, strength was up, so... Yeah, it felt like the stars aligned. The weather was in our favor.
Oh, very much so. And really, I wanted to go back and just talk about Chicago really quick because then you run Boston this year, and your mindset shifted pretty significantly in terms of how you approach just even training for this race. You were not nearly, when I say you weren't as all in, you didn't train this to try to get a PR.
Right.
Yeah, you backed off. What led to that change?
So there were a couple different things. One, I was taking a continuing ed course. So I knew that between working full time, this course that would eat up another 10 to 15 hours a week, I just wouldn't be able to put in the same level of dedication to my runs as I had for Chicago. Not only that, but I feel like I've run Boston enough. I've BQ'd on it. That was the first ever BQ that I ever had. Like, I've proven my point on the course, and for me now it's just a day of celebration, and it's my favorite, you know, quote-unquote holiday.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like, be fit, go out, have fun, celebrate, cheer, see some cool stuff, meet some cool people. And so it was, I think that's the key to longevity with running marathons as well and not getting burnt out, is like know when to push, know when to take it easy, and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I like that, because number one, I think there's kind of a misconception in terms of how fit you can get while not necessarily going for it. I mean, I have to go back and look at Final Surge to see what you were topping at, but you, I mean, you still ran, you know, several 18, 19 milers. Your mileage was still somewhat decent. It just, it didn't look like true race training, but you were still really freaking fit. I mean, you were putting down some times that showed that you were really fit, that a lot of that fitness that you built up getting ready for Chicago, that it was still there. It just wasn't maybe race sharpened.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And that was my goal with Boston, was to basically carry me from Chicago to my next fall race. So I think when you and I talked right after Chicago, I basically said, look, I just want to use Boston to keep fitness, not to try to get faster or to PR, but just like maintain where I'm at and then have a little bit of recovery and then make that push for another PR in the fall.
Speaking of that, have you decided on a fall race yet?
Good question. I'm signed up for one, but I think I've narrowed it down to either Columbus or Philly. So right now I'm signed up for Philly, but Columbus is it's earlier in the season, which I like. So TBD. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you want to pace me.
I have to earn another BQ again. If I want to be in 2026, I have to go and run and train hard and earn a BQ, so.
Oh, right. The 2024 for the 2026 throws me off. Yeah, you're right.
Well, yeah. Because I've decided, I like that you talked about, you know, you think one of the keys to longevity is knowing when to push and knowing when to pull back. And for me now, this is really three straight springs where I've trained really hard. There was Pittsburgh that got me into Boston last year, and then Boston this year. And I know for me, like the time of pushing hard for a winter is not this upcoming winter. Like, I really want to give myself a break. I don't mind spring races the way that some people do. I don't love them the way that I love fall races, but it's a lot to deal with. It's a lot to train through. I don't love training in the winter, especially when there are those days where you look outside and, like, you know that you have to get outside and do those miles, but every... Hi, Arlo!
Every time, like, clockwork.
She muted yelling at him. Oh, I know. Every time, every time we've had you on, Arlo gets going, which I love. I knew coming into this race. What's nice about the way Boston ended up working out for me, people ask me if I'm disappointed, and there's aspects to it I was, but the one thing I wasn't disappointed about is that this race didn't keep me from going back next year. I knew I wasn't going to go back next year to run. I didn't want to train through the winter, so yeah, it's this fall to get me into 2026, because if I don't, then I would have to run a spring marathon next year to get into Boston, or else I'd have to wait another year. And I don't know if I want to wait 3 years in between, so... Yeah, Columbus is interesting. There's going to be a little Rust Belt running contingent down there that we could have some fun in Columbus.
That's what I'm excited about. So many friends.
I know Steph's going to be there. Andrew's going to be there. I'm going to be there. I'm scheduling a call with our one athlete, Erin Owens, who ran Akron for us last year, and she plans on doing the half down there. Erin's great. I love her. You guys will get along really well. So that's at least five that I can think of. I'm sure there's a couple others. I think maybe
Heather?
I think Heather Smith might be down. Yeah, Heather's going to be down there. Sarah's the only one who's not. She's doing something, I think, in Kentucky. I'd have to go back and look at her file, because she and I did a call last week just kind of looking at summer, and she's got something different going on. I don't believe it's her. This sounds like it's news to you. What's going on?
Yeah,
in that
I didn't know. That is news to me. Well, maybe there's still time to peer pressure her.
Considering she's been doing the same thing for you. I love that you guys have that. I love that you guys play bingo. I think Sarah was just posting about bingo today, the beer can bingo, and I think she saw five straight fireballs, so it's an instant win. God. part of me wants to see what that group chat is like, and part of me goes, nah, I don't need to. Lord only knows some of the things going on in there. Oh. So let's fast forward to race weekend, because we don't really need to get into too much of your training, because it was kind of almost like base training.
Yeah.
We get to race weekend. How were your feelings about this race weekend different from maybe previous years? You and I hung out quite a bit. You got me a lot of French pastries, which I appreciate.
Yeah, race weekend, I mean, again, always my favorite weekend of the year. Gosh, so many feelings. This year I was definitely more excited. Last year it felt last year I had a hard time getting excited. I had just come off Tokyo and finishing the World Majors and then jumped right into marathon being like half injured. So it wasn't until we were on the bus to Hopkinton that I got excited for Boston. It's like, it's happening, we're doing it. And this time around, the whole weekend was magical. I was amped up from the very beginning. And I mean, you know, leading up to your trip to Boston, like the number of texts you were getting was slowly increasing because I couldn't contain my excitement.
Yeah. It was so much fun to come back this year knowing what to expect and knowing the city and knowing, like, oh, you and I are going to do this, and knowing, like, what that was and where it was going to be. It was so much cooler. I felt like it was so much cooler coming there this year. Your first Boston is your first Boston, and there's just something really special about that. But there was something about just coming back and knowing the city and knowing what you and I were going to do and just the fun that we had. Yeah, so I definitely felt that. I didn't realize that you weren't super excited about it until you got on the bus, though.
Yeah, it just, you know, actually your excitement from 2023 got me excited. Seeing Boston happening, again, as like a first-timer, but for myself, I wasn't excited. So
I gotcha.
Yeah, it was good, but this year, the whole weekend was great. And I'm sure for you too, probably like it had different vibes because the first time running a new race, you're always a little stressed. Like I know for you, you didn't quite know where to go with like the bag check or the distance between bag check and catching the buses. And that can add a little bit of stress. And so the second time you're like, oh, I kind of remember this. Okay. I know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. I know how to plan it and time it. And so, and even you said, like, just seeing where I live in relation to the city the second time around, it clicked a whole lot more just how close we are.
Yeah. Yeah. There was that comfort level with where I was. There was that comfort level with just the logistics. I think that's the thing that if you're coming and doing a major for the first time after doing, you know, smaller, when I say smaller, you know, like a Pittsburgh or a Columbus or a Cleveland, which are still decent-sized races, but they're not on the scale of a Boston. The logistics are just so much more mind-blowing because there's so many people. You know, the expo was just pure chaos, just people everywhere. And actually, I think you and I talked about it when we were there. I was blown away by how different aspects of that were. It's a different sponsor this year. They moved it to a different floor. Last year, you could bypass the Adidas section if you didn't want to go in, and this year, you were forced right into it, and just everybody's shopping, and it was just... that was a madhouse. And then just even getting out of there, just to like, you know, find my name on the roster, things like that were just, it was a madhouse everywhere. But knowing the logistics this time around made it so much easier, you know, like knowing where bag check was. And it was kind of funny because, you know, there were multiple times throughout my experience before getting to the start line where, you know, we were doing bag check and, you know, I'm walking with a couple of guys and they're like, you know, like, are these the buses? I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, okay. These are the bag check buses. So look, you know, for the buses, they got your numbers just like they do on your bib, and you drop stuff there. And, you know, the park that you go to, yeah, you go back there and you hop on the bus. And so I was explaining that. And then even when we got to Hopkinton, I was walking up the path to get you to the actual athletes' village after we got off the bus. And so I heard a couple of younger guys, they're like, you know, so like, how far away from the start line are we? I'm like, oh, you know, so you're 3/4 of a mile away from the start line. I'm like, it's really cool because there's, you know, there's bags to drop off, like your shoes and your throwaway clothes and whatever you've got, you know, and you know, I'm just kind of like walking them through the logistics of getting to the start line and then how the first 4 miles are just incredibly like claustrophobic because there's so many people. I'm like, it's going to be totally anxiety inducing. Just let it happen. It'll be okay. You'll find some space. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, how many of these have you done? Yeah, this is just number two. But it's like all those things that were a shock to me last year, they weren't anymore because I was going back. It was really cool.
The part that I found amazing is that you and I were at Runner's Village at the same time, although you started before I did. And by the time wave one was starting to head to the corrals, an announcer came on saying that they had already run out of sunblock for the day. So just to put it into perspective, like, that's the kind of weather we had. And I was like, oh, gosh, this does not bode well for anyone else further down the road.
No, not at all. And, you know, what's funny is that one of the things that you were so good about last year was you kind of talked me through just some of the logistics, some of the things I would have never thought to think about for running Boston. And one of the things you told me then was, make sure that you have sunblock because you're going to be running one direction for the entire race. You're going to be running right into the sun. And you were telling me you've seen people get sunburned through clothing. You know, so I made sure that I had spray on sunblock. Like, I was in my Airbnb at, 6 a.m. spraying myself down. The only thing I didn't think about was I didn't put anything on my lips. I didn't have any like sunblock chapstick, and I didn't think about that. So for like 4 days, my lips just felt absolutely awful from running directly into the sun. But other than that, I was good. Your advice was really good. That's funny because you and I were in the Athletes Village at the same time. And looking back on it now, the mistake that I made was I was behind the school in the shade, and it felt super comfortable. And in my mind was, so we're gonna get to this because you were texting me 2 weeks before, just anxious as hell about the weather. And you and I went to Lacan the day before the race, and you did a shakeout run like before we went out, and you came and you picked me up. And I remember stepping out of the Airbnb, and I was in my new Boston jacket, and it felt cool. And you're like, oh my God, I'm so screwed tomorrow. Like, it was so hot. I sweat all over the place. I'm like, this is like, you look fine now, and this feels pretty comfortable. Like, if this is the way tomorrow is, this will be great, because I think it was probably about 50, and it would have been around the same time we would have been taking off. And so it warmed up like 15 degrees just over a day. They had been predicting like mid-60s, and I think the high ended up being like 73, 74.
Yeah.
But I was in the shade, and I very much had that previous day in mind of, hey, like when Eric and I went to the bakery, it was pretty comfortable. Like, it'll be okay. And it was as I was walking to the start line, and you got out of that shade where, people are going and they're dropping off their throwaway clothing, they're getting their sunblock, and you're fully out in the sun. And like the last little clouds going by and the sun pops out. And I remember being really warm and thinking, oh, I'm so screwed. This is awful.
Yeah.
And it was never comfortable after that. And so this is where I want to talk specifically about your race, because the thing that you did so well is you were really worried about the heat. And you even texted me before I was about to get into my car, my Uber. And you're like, hey, just go out there and have fun. And I texted you and just said, hey, I know it's going to be warm. That's not your weather. Just go out there, take it easy, enjoy the race. Like, you'll be fine. And I think you were like trying to coach me through it. And if I had taken your advice, I would have had a much better time. Because, I mean, you nailed it. You had the mentality of like, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to fun run this race. And you did. And I want you to walk us through that. But you also came in at like, what, 3:42?
Yeah, 3:42 with...
Which is, you did London with our coaching like a year ago? 2 years ago.
Yeah, year and a half ago? Yeah.
Was that a fall race that year?
It was, yeah. That was like off timing because of the pandemic. Yep.
Yeah.
That was the 3:30.
3:35. Yeah. So, I want you to walk through. So I've talked about just my start, my Athletes Village experience and my start line experience. And I'm not going to recap my race because it was bad. But I had you on. We wanted to have you on because you did crush it. So take me through from when you're at Athletes Village, just kind of like what your mindset is when you're about to start out.
Well, I took clothes with me to the start because I thought it would be cool. And I... it wasn't. I ditched those really quickly and was hot even before the race started. So met up with an acquaintance, and we decided we were going to run, separate timing because we were in different corrals, same wave, different corrals. And so didn't see each other until the very end, and then they overheated and said it was a really bad race. They came up from behind, so I knew that they had fallen behind their goals. So interestingly, at the very start of the race, like 1 mile in, I hear over my shoulder, and this is like my favorite part of Boston this year because it's just such a cool story. But I hear over my shoulder someone say, "Oh my gosh, this is going to be miserable. It's so hot. I'm already overheating." And I just turn backwards and I say, "Oh my gosh, I know. Boston hasn't seen sunshine in months, and we're in for a world of hurt." And so I asked this person where they're from, and they said Alaska. And I was like, "Oh, that's cool. Alaska. Yeah, you're going to be screwed, but great. Good for you." And so we were running the same pace. So we were just chatting back and forth. And like, whenever I see the people who have their bibs on for Cheer Me On, I'm getting my sixth star today and completing the world majors.
Yeah.
I scream and cheer as loud as I can. I'm really obnoxious.
Yes.
And I
told me to do that last year. Yep.
And so I'm screaming, and it turns out that this woman also finished the world majors. And so I asked her a little bit about it, and I got my sixth star at Tokyo 2023, and she got hers at Tokyo this year in 2024. So as we're running together, we're passing the miles, and we're talking about our world majors experience. And, you know, 4 or 5 miles had passed at this point that we're running together, and she has a really unique name, and people are cheering for her. And so I look and I was like, "Are you so-and-so?" And she said, "Yeah, that's me that they're cheering for." And I was like, "This is going to sound so random, but I'm pretty sure I have your number in my phone and we've texted before." And it turns out my husband's best friend growing up lives in Alaska now, and he's originally from Boston. Mm-hmm. And when we saw him a couple years ago when he came home for Christmas, he and his wife put me in touch with one of their friends from Alaska who was trying to run the world majors. And I had never seen pictures of this person before. I had never like talked to her on the phone, but we had texted. And because she has a unique name, I picked up on it and put two and two together.
Yeah.
But if her name were like Sarah or Jessica or Jennifer, I would have never made the connection. But I thought that was really cool. And then at a certain point during the race, she was even answering phone calls. And she's like, "You're not going to believe this. I'm running with one of Zach's friends." But, 30,000 people. And I randomly connected with someone that I only knew through a friend of a friend. So that was fun.
That's so wild. Yeah. And I didn't realize you guys had run together for that long. That's cool.
Yeah. It was like up until mile 11 or like 9 or 11. And then she overheated and said she wanted to walk. And I was like, "Okay, I'm going to keep running just for a little bit. I want to run at least halfway before I take my first walk break." But I knew that I was going to take walk breaks.
Okay.
So I made it to mile 14. And then I was like, "Okay, I'm good." But my race strategy was to yell and scream and cheer, eat all of the popsicles. So anytime I saw someone handing out popsicles, I would take one. And sometimes I'd run and eat it. Sometimes I'd walk and eat it. But my gosh, they were life-saving. They were, I've never tasted anything so good in my whole life.
I still love when you and I were at Fenway the next night and the race pictures are starting to drop. And, for these bigger races, it takes 3 or 4 days for everything to drop. And you're like, "Oh, look, here's one of me getting a popsicle." And then, a little bit later, like another one dropped. You're like, "Here's another one." And I think that one, you're double fisting the popsicles.
Yeah,
and you were just
been
so excited. You're like a kid on Christmas who's going through like, "Another one, look, it's me holding, another popsicle."
So that was, popsicles, screaming, cheering, and lots of hugs. So anytime I saw friends who were spectating, I stopped and gave them a big sweaty hug. And then walking on some of the hills or whenever I felt like I needed it, I allowed myself that grace. And so when I was running, I kept about an 8-minute pace. And when I was walking, it
just
added time, but I was okay with that.
Yeah. And I think that, I honestly think that was just a day where you just kind of had to eventually just whatever your body was going to let you do, you had to accept, because it was just, it was so hot. It wasn't just that it was warm. It was that it was full sun. Like, there was no cloud cover. That sun was out the entire time. It never broke. It was always beating down on you. Yeah, you guys should see, like, there's videos that, like, Niles took and that friends took. And in every single video, Erica's running and she's smiling and she's laughing and she's like, oh my God, and going up to somebody and hugging them and just look like, you look like you're having the time of your life. And it was funny because, like, every time one of these would pop up, you're like, what you're not seeing is that I was telling people right before this how much this sucked. I'm like, yes. And yet, every single time I see a video, you're happy as can be. When you said it's your favorite holiday, you certainly, it certainly showed.
Yeah. And then the next day, my throat hurt all day from screaming, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But you still managed, and you came through in 3:42.
Yeah.
So you told us what your favorite memory was. Is there a favorite memory you have of the back half of the course? Because that's when things started to get really tough. I mean, it was always tough, but I think once you started hitting in the hills and you're through the halfway mark, like, it was just tough.
A favorite. Ooh, gosh. That's a good question. No, I don't think so.
Oh. Okay, no, that's fair.
It was, like, just trying to hang on at that point, but...
Yeah.
No, I had lots of people on Heartbreak, which I thought was fun. Like, the running club that I ran with, Cambridge Running Club, they were all out there representing. That's where I saw Niles for the first time. I saw some St. Jude folks, and so that was good. Oh, and then one of my other favorite parts was running through Wellesley and just high-fiving everyone. I high-fived, not just in Wellesley, but along the whole course, thousands of people, and then no surprise, but the next week I ended up sick, so maybe I made poor choices, but my gosh, I had fun.
You know what though, I think, you know, the crowd is massive, and one of the things that you told me last year preparing for my first Boston was that the crowd's massive and you're going to want to engage with them. And if you spend too much time wanting to engage with them, it's almost going to take you out of your race. So you have to enjoy it, but not spend too much mental energy on it. And I took that, and that was good because I kind of was able to zoom in and out when I did it last year. This year, you know, I was still high-fiving the kids in the early miles when I still felt good. But like last year when I went through Wellesley, I was high-fiving some of the girls, but I think my pace got down to like a 6:15. And it was like, oh, that's a little too fast. Like, we got to back this off, because I was still worried that I'd gone out too fast and was going to blow up in the hills. By that point, when I hit Wellesley this year, I knew it wasn't going to be my day. I'd already taken a walk break. I high-fived every single girl that I could. I enjoyed every bit of that. Like, I just, there's a couple of really cool photos of me that I like, and it's just me grinning ear to ear going through the scream tunnel and high-fiving every girl that was there and just allowing myself to enjoy that. And if there was a benefit to the fact that it was so hot, it was awful for us. Let me tell you, the worst thing about post-race was when we went back to the Airbnb and we're watching the local news, the number of times I heard, it was a great day for the spectators, but awful for the runners. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, I know. But it was cool because the crowd, it was much bigger than it was last year. And it made sense because it was a gorgeous day to be out there. And they knew how much people were struggling. And they would, you know, if you were slowing down or if you were walking, there were people that would make eye contact with you and just like very sincerely be like, man, this sucks. Like, I can tell you're hurting, man. Like, just keep going. We got you. And it was just that for as much as I hated my performance in the race, I loved the race even more because I carried that away from that experience having gone through. It was just, everybody there is happy that you're there. Like, it's Boston's race, but I think even more so this year, people were like, I understand. Like, we got you. Just keep going. And that was, I mean, that was really meaningful on a day when over a tenth of the field ended up in a medical tent.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah.
Can I just tell you about my coworker? And I am so proud
of
her.
Yes, please. This is such a great story.
I like.
Yeah, because
Julie,
you and I were talking beforehand. We were worried.
Yeah. So,
yes, go
one
ahead.
Of my coworkers ran her first marathon, and she had a pretty rough training cycle. She caught the bug last year, seeing everybody at the finish line, and she was like, oh, I'd love to do that one day, but I never could. And then she thought about it, and she's like, wait a minute, why can't I? Like, the only person who's stopping me from doing this is me. I'm going to go for it. And so she started ramping up her training because she's been prone to knee problems. She started ramping up her training very early, like I want to say maybe November. And she's like, I'm going to do it the right way. I want to slow and steady, and I'm going to try to stay healthy. And she did all the things right. She went to PT. She did strength stuff. But inevitably, come February, she got one 13-mile run in. Her calf started bothering her, and then it moved up to her knee and then back down to her calf. And after that 13-mile run, there were like weeks where she wasn't running, or she would get in, you know, 2 or 3 miles very sporadically, and then she'd be sidelined. And it was 2 weeks before the race, and she was like, I don't know, like, I don't think this is going to happen. And then a week out, she was like, am I foolish to try this? And I was like, well, I think as long as you're honest with yourself and you go in with like a race strategy, I think you can do it. You know, it's not going to be fun, but you can do it. And so she picked up her bib. She ran. Not only did she run, but she had an incredible time in general, but also considering that her training went pear-shaped, and she didn't get all the long runs in that she thought. And I saw her pictures after, and she was grinning ear to ear and high-fiving, and I was like,
awesome.
I was so proud of her. After the race that night, I was sitting on the couch, and I was like, I need to FaceTime her. I need to talk to her. I need to see what's up. I need to know how she's feeling. I want to hear everything. And so I FaceTimed her, and she was like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm at the pub. And I was like, oh, okay, she's feeling good enough she's feeling good enough to go and have a beer. But I really wanted to watch her finish, because after Niles dropped you and I off at your Airbnb and he took me home, I don't even know if I told you this part, but he wanted to go and bike back to the finish to watch her finish. He was like, oh, I think I can get back there to see her cross the finish line. And I was like, oh, I'm going to hop on my e-bike and go. He's like, no, you're not. He's like, I am taking you home, and you're going to shower, and you're going to work on hydrating. And I was like, but. He was like, no, you're not getting on a bike.
God, This just makes me think about, you know, you and I in Boston Commons, and how, like, you were all like, I just ran this great race. And I was like, oh, this is awful. I just want to go to sleep. Like, you were so full of energy, and I felt anything, but I did not know that you tried to go back to the finish line. It's typical, though, of how you felt afterwards, because you had so much energy after that race.
And even before I met up with you in the common, I wanted to watch people finish, because I've never really done that before. And then in my head, marathon brain, I was like, oh, all I need to do is, like, go up a block and I'll watch everyone finish. And they were like, no, you can't get to the actual finish area. Like, you'll have to go all the way around, all the way down, like, cross the Mass Ave Bridge. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not doing that. That's not happening.
Yeah, for people that don't, like, if you haven't done Boston, you don't know. Like, when you cross the finish line, you know, you keep walking forward, and like the gear check buses are all the way down at the end of the same street that you're on, that you finish on, Boylston. They also cut up some other roads that, you know, cross perpendicular to Boylston, but there's like race logistics related to the race, like on all of those different side streets. So it's like you are in the race area, and of course there's tight security, which makes sense. But so you're in that race area no matter which way you go. So it's like you got to go all the way to the end of Boylston and leave and go to Boston Common, or you've got to hang a right and get through all those little side streets. And once you're out, you're out. They won't let you back in. So, yeah, then you do have to go back around, because there's no way to just kind of, like, cut over. It's a madhouse. I think it's kind of the one thing that's a little bit unfortunate just about the way the race, just where it ends, is that there's no, like, big wide open area for anybody to kind of conquer, unless you go to Boston Common, but that's just so well beyond the race area. And there's obviously a lot of security because of what happened 11 years ago, so it is, you can't just go back and watch. You kind of have to just kind of hobble along and just kind of watch the people around you. And I don't know if this was your experience, there were still a lot of people in medical distress when I was, like, cross the finish line and getting done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were people that I was checking on, because they were just like walking sideways from side to side. And really just did not look good. Yeah.
There was the guy that I passed a quarter mile from the finish line. Now, so think about this. You run the Boston Marathon. You're a quarter mile from finishing. You're there, and, like, it's – you go down Boylston for, like, 600 yards. I mean, everything's right there in front of you. You can see it. And I don't know what happened to this gentleman. I don't know if it was heat stroke or a heart attack or what, but he's a quarter mile from the finish line, and he's got paramedics around him. They're trying to, you know, put him on a gurney so they can wheel him out of there. And it's like, shit, to do all that and to be that close and just go down, like, just absolutely awful.
Yeah.
But it was happening a lot. Like, my parents talked about how they saw somebody who like, walked sideways into a sign because he was so disoriented, and people, like, tried to basically drag him across. And that was going underneath the underpass, like, on Comm Ave, so close. Cool. But you still haven't made that right turn on the Hereford, so it's still a ways away. It was, yeah, like I said, it was 3,000 plus that ended up in a medical tent in a field of, like, 26,000.
Yeah. And of the people I know who were, like, racing for time, it seems like, on average, people were 30 minutes slower. Like, almost across the board, everyone I know was, yeah.
I love the story about your PT. This is one of those, like, you don't know what happened. All you're doing is you're looking at times, and unless you talk to people, you don't know their experience. Your PT was going for how fast a time? 240?
He wanted sub 250.
Okay, that's right. And we ended up looking at times where we were there in Boston Common, like, just typing in names and, like, looking at results, and his popped up, and I think he was three teens, I think, something like that.
Yeah, it was like 320, give or take.
Yeah. And, yeah, so you and I are going, ah, shoot, like, awful day. No, not at all. He just basically decided to bail on going after time. And every single video you were sending me, it's like he's got a beer in hand. He's got a shot in hand. It's just he decided to really go for it and just have a party. And
he went
had
hard.
A blast. He did. Like, that's a really abrupt turn to make because I was behind the school in the Athletes Village, I was with a group of about five or six guys, and it was cool because we're all doing the whole, like, where we're from and how we got there and what we're going for, and the number of guys that were like, yeah, you know, I'm in, like, the first or second corral, you know, I got here doing a 250 and I'm really hoping for, like, a 240, and I think, you know, at some point today I could be really aggressive and really push. Yeah, so people were feeling that way before the start, and to make that quick turnaround in the middle of the race to decide, not only am I going to just accept the disappointment of not going there, but I'm going to go and have a party and do it. Like, that's a quick turnaround, and your PT managed to pull that off very well because the videos are amazing.
And I think that's one of the things about Boston and the course being the way it is and it being a spring marathon is that once you overheat and you hit that low point, there's really no coming back from it. Like, you're just,
right.
It is what it is. You're on the pain train.
Well, there won't be any coming back for me. Oh, very much so. Like, you got to ride that out, and whatever it's going to feel like, you just got to choose how you're going to go ahead and accept that because it's going to hurt. And God, that hurt so bad. No injuries, though, so I guess I have that to be happy about.
Do you look back on it fondly now?
Yeah, I do. So, you know what's kind of funny is that I remember being at work the Friday after, and there's a guy up here, he's a mutual friend of Andrew and I's, who's really talented. He runs, like, 250s, high 240s. So anytime he wants to go to Boston, he can. And we had been talking beforehand, because we both kind of had, like, little hiccups in our training late, and we weren't feeling 100% confident when we got to the start line, but we felt good about our fitness, and we were just kind of talking about our strategies, and we both bombed. You know, he went probably about 25 minutes slower than he intended to, just like I did. And we really didn't talk much afterwards. So he texted me on that Friday and he said, hey man, like, I'm just curious, like, how are you feeling? And I told him, you know, at that point I still felt pretty awful about stuff. And, you know, we kind of talked our way through it. And really the conclusion just got to, like, number one, we know why it was a bad day. We know it sucked and it is what it is. And we kind of agreed that a big part of it for us is that because you have to work so hard to get to Boston, the really, really good days are more meaningful. But now we've seen that, unfortunately, the really, really bad days also kind of feel like more than it is. Like, we've had bad races, but it just kind of felt like more. And when we got done with the conversation, what we realized, like, neither one of us had any insight as to, like, how to process it, and neither one of us necessarily felt better. But just knowing that this other person who's out there, who, you know, Ryan's incredibly talented, the fact that he was struggling the way that I do was almost like, okay, so it's not just in my head, like, it's okay to feel like shit about this, and that's all right. And I think from that point on, I honestly felt okay about it. Like, I'm still annoyed with my performance. There's no good way to handle that, though. Like, when you go and you get exposed to something that extreme that you just haven't experienced for 6 months, there's just only so many good ways to handle it. I think that's probably one of the reasons why I'm as excited as I am about my athlete, Melissa, who crushed Pittsburgh this past weekend, is that she got hit with 92% humidity and just, she nailed it. She just nailed how to run that race. I mean, and we talked a little bit about running by effort and things like that, but still, like, running in 92% humidity, there's just only so much you can do to prepare for that because you don't see that often. And so, like, I'm still annoyed about that, but, you know, I told you, like, the crowd was amazing, and to feel that kind of intimate connection with the crowd that understood how much you were suffering and wanted to pull you through, it made me love the race even more. I can't wait to be back there running it because I feel even more connected to that course and that crowd. So yeah, I mean, I feel overall much better than I did immediately afterwards. It sucks that I've run now my best marathon ever and my worst marathon ever consecutive years on Boston's course, but that's the marathon for you. But yeah, I do. I mean, it was still an amazing experience. I had such a great time hanging out with you. You know, we went to Salem the next day and you showed us around there, and that was an absolute blast. Like, I felt like I got to really enjoy my time in the city more, you know, so it's also not just a race to go there and do. It's a great city to come and visit and explore and get to see. So I'm grateful to you and Niles for that because we had a great time. My parents had a great time. So yeah, I mean, it's still a really good memory. It's just, it was a tough day.
Good learning experience.
Yeah. You know, and I think the other thing too is that, you know, this kind of goes back into the coaching tip that I gave you, or that I gave everybody. You know, running evolves as we go. And I've had a lot of changes in my own life in the past year with a career change. And you and I talked about just some of the things that are going on there before we hopped on the podcast. And that's just a lot of extra stress. And it's a different dynamic from what I've had in previous years when I've been training. And I maybe didn't handle that balance of kind of like life and work and running as well as I would have wanted to. And so now my running has to kind of evolve around that a little bit. And so some of the things I took away from Boston, you talk about it being a learning experience, it's just I got to kind of reconceptualize somewhat of how my running fits into my life. And that's fine. That's a new challenge, and hopefully I figure that out and, you know, I handle Boston better the next time I'm there.
Are you going to come spectate next year?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think this is almost like a trip now that I can't imagine not making. I'm sure there'll be times where I can't just because there's other things going on, but it's such a cool experience, and I can't imagine not being there for it. I know Andrew talked a lot about having FOMO the entire weekend that he wasn't going to be there for it. And honestly, I want to be able to come and kind of just not have to worry about the pressure of running a race. I want to see it from that other perspective now. I've watched it on TV, and it's really cool, but you know, I want to watch the professionals come through. You know, I'm following along. I'm sure you follow Emma Bates on Instagram and see her, like, 20-part Boston Marathon recaps. It's so cool to go through and read it. And, you know, I've watched the race since I've been home on TV, but I want to be able to spectate that next year and see what that looks like for some of the professionals coming through.
We'll put you on a tandem with Niles.
That's right. It didn't work out for Andrew and Niles, but we can go ahead and get a tandem bike next year.
He would be so
I'll be there.
Mad.
We didn't ride tandem bicycles. Yeah, no, so I plan on coming back there, and, you know, I got to see the loft, and you know, if you'll have me, I'd love to hang out on the loft and watch you dance to Whitney Houston in the beginning of race morning.
Yeah!
Oh, God. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, my parents and I are still, like, incredibly grateful just for you know, you guys cooked us dinner the day before, and you took us around, and it was just a really good time to have you guys, you know, show us around. So thank you for that.
You missed, like, one of the best parts of the weekend, too, when we took your parents
around.
We went to Harvard Square and,
you know,
along the river.
That's the other thing. Is I don't know in retrospect if I was battling something or what, if it was pre-race nerves. I don't think it was. I almost feel like I was battling something at one point because I was, like, super tired that day, but usually if I'm sick and I'm tired. I sleep really, really hard. I just kind of like vegged on the couch. I didn't move. I didn't do much, but I wasn't like so tired that I needed to sleep. So I don't know. I don't know if I was battling something or what was going on, but I really hate that I didn't get to go and do that because that would have been great to see. So I'll have to fit that in next year. I want to run along the Charles River next year. Like, I haven't had a chance to do that for like a shakeout run or anything yet. So,
oh my gosh,
it's
you
so
haven't.
Cool. It's so pretty over there. No.
Okay, we're doing it.
That's just that little. That's yes, 100%. So yeah, this is already penciled in. Like, I already know what I'm doing next Boston Marathon weekend. I'll be
Yay.
There. Yeah. So is there anything else you want to talk about? Anything we missed covering?
I don't think so. I'm excited for Boston next year, and who knows what the weather will bring.
I am too. Yeah, we'll see. Like, I've brought really, really good weather, and I've brought really, really awful weather, so we'll see, you know, where I fall next year. It's going to be gorgeous weather, and then I'm going to come back in 2 years, and it's going to be just another kick in the balls again. I was on my Facebook memories, like, maybe it was probably the weekend after I got back. I think the Boston Marathon in 2020 would have been, like, on April 20th or something like that. And
sounds
I had my
right.
Facebook memory popped up. And my Facebook memory popped up, and I think the weather that day was, like, 49 and partial clouds. I was like, oh, Mother Nature, you robbed Boston Marathoners of that weather during that year. That's cruel.
That would have been, like, probably the nicest weather, too, if it were sunny in that temp.
Yeah, and it was, like, partial, I think it was, like, showing, like, partial sun, you know, so, like, a little bit of sun, a little bit of shade, because the sun does take the energy out of you, but 49 degrees in that, oh, chef's kiss weather.
Well, I was even thinking, so the weekend of Boston, there were no leaves on the trees, but we kept saying, like, oh, gosh, like, so many flowers are in bloom. It's really interesting because we didn't have, like, a great winter. Like, it wasn't awful snow-wise, but it was cold, and less than a week after Boston, sure enough, like, full leaves on all the trees. And I was like, oh gosh, it would have been so nice to just have that little bit of shade. But that's the other tricky thing is that it's like just right on the cusp and no shade anywhere.
And you guys, you know, you and I had plenty of conversations about this because you would be texting me about moving your runs around because you'd have long run schedule and you were projected to get like 2 inches of rain the day you were supposed to do a long run. And you're like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. So yeah, when you talk about how that weather was really the first time you experienced it, like, I know, like, you were talking to me about your training in the weeks leading up to it, and it was just always gray and rainy and windy and awful. And it just magically went away for Boston Marathon weekend.
Well, and then the days immediately after, it went right back to rain and clouds and cold. But it happens.
We were driving home the Wednesday, and we were listening to the Guardians game. And, you know, the Guardians announcer was saying, he's like, yeah, he goes, it's been real wild here in Boston the past couple of days. He's like, we had summer on Monday, and it's back to being, like, winter here today. And he was describing the conditions. I'm like, of course. 2 days later, it's nice conditions to go and run a marathon in, but...
Mm-hmm. It always happens.
Yeah.
It's like clockwork.
Yeah. I was actually just... I've been rereading Meb's book on all the 26 marathons that he ran. And he did one of his Boston chapters. I think it was the year after he won the race, and it was pretty warm that day. And he said, this is always the problem with running Boston. He's like, it's a spring marathon, and it's always warmer than it's supposed to be, and this happens more often than it doesn't. So I'm like, yeah, I know. Thanks, Meb, I know. All about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like you said, you're looking forward to Boston next year. I am too. I'm looking forward to coaching you with whatever race you decide to eventually go with Columbus. So, yeah, you and I will be in touch. We'll get you training again soon.
Which one's flatter?
You're not doing that ultra, are you?
No.
I don't know about Philly.
No, unfortunately.
Yes. That's... No, fortunately. These are the conversations that Eric and I have. She'll tell me, she's like, oh, I can't wait for Boston to be over. I need time off. Like, I'm taking a month off. Like, we're not going to coach. I'm just taking a month off. I'm not doing anything. Also, I might run an ultra marathon, like... 3 weeks
a month
after.
From now.
What? Wait. Oh, that's right. It was going to be a month from now. But yeah, it was going to be like, I'm going to run an ultra marathon. So, like, training couldn't stop. So, like, this all happens within the same conversation.
5 minutes.
Yes, we're very happy. Because you were also talking about trying to, like, pry some of our other Rust Belt running athletes to go and do that with you. Rust Belt running athletes who don't have the mileage base to do that right now. Sarah. So we're very happy to hear you won't be doing that ultra. What's flatter? I don't know much about the Philly course. I would have to look. Columbus is a fast course. Andrew's the perfect guy to talk to about this. He had the distinction. Columbus is a fast course. It's not that there's no hills. There are a couple of hills. There's one that's kind of poorly timed. It happens like right around mile 19. And just after a largely flat course, you hit that and you're like, oh man, this sucks. Why did you put this here? But honestly, after running a course like Boston and just training and doing some hills, I don't think it would hit you the way that it would hit somebody that doesn't do a lot of hills. When I did Columbus Marathon the last time I did it, I wasn't much of a hill runner then. I do a lot more now. I don't think it would faze me as much. Darius puts on a good show. Darius has said that he wants to run that race. He's the race director at Columbus. He has said he likes to think of that race as a major that just isn't a major. That's how he tries to run it. And Columbus is incredibly well managed. He does a hell of a job.
So the one thing that I really like about Columbus that Philly doesn't have is that they have pacers for every 5 minutes, whereas the increments Philly is every 10 minutes. And okay. I think based on my goals for the fall, I'd want to start with the 325 pace group, knowing that I would hopefully, fingers crossed, work ahead of them or run ahead of them. Similar to how I did in Chicago. And if they don't have a 325, then I want to probably start with the 330 group to kind of hold myself back and start slowly to negative split. And I think it would be a loftier goal to try to go from 330 to sub 320 than starting with the 325 group.
A lot more running by feel for sure, because you'd have to kind of break off pretty early and then kind of work your way down without going too fast. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Columbus, there's a reason we've had Darius Blackford on this podcast multiple times. The guy's just a good dude. He's a runner's race director. He talks so much about wanting to show off that city and put on a good show for the runners, and he does a good job with it. So if you do that, it's a Rust Belt running recommended race for sure. All right, we're gonna hop off of this because Andrew's gonna kill me for taking this episode to 54 minutes now. So, all right, Erica, thank you so much. I had a great time again. You had a great race. I just love coaching you through these things. So, thank you for that, Andrew. Back to you, bud.
Thanks so much, Erica and Adam. I told you guys would enjoy that. And you're still here, so obviously you did. Until next time, just a few things to, just say again. RustBeltRunning.com. We want you to be with us. It's that time of year where we're coming off spring races, and we're looking towards the fall. The weather's perfect for training, and the racing weather is about to be a lot more predictable on the other side of it. So this is big goal season, and we want to help you with that. So we're continuing to grow, and we hope that you take some of that journey with us. So RustBeltRunning.com, you can learn more about it, or you can reach out to us on Instagram or email us at RustBeltRunning@gmail.com. We'd love to work with you. We'd love to help you meet goals. That's what we do best. So. And that's pretty much it. So, we appreciate all the support, guys. And thanks so much for listening today. We'll be back soon with more. And until then, enjoy your miles, everybody.